The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Breaking Banks. And I have to apologize, I'm not actually Brett King. I'm Liz Lumley. I'm having in as a host. But don't fret, we will bring in Brett very soon for a special interview. But I'm here, I'm broadcasting live from London, from, as everyone here in the choir can sing, which everyone knows is the fintech capital of the world. So I'm going to probably be hosting a few more of these Breaking Banks radio shows over the coming year. So I hope you all get used to me and don't miss Brett too much. But during the day, I am one of the directors at Startup Bootcamp FinTech and our brand new insurance-focused accelerator, InsureTech. And so that's the headquarters that I'm sitting in right now talking to all of you. So we've got a really good show for you tonight. We're really going to talk a lot about crowdfunding and alternative finance. So we have a number of people coming up. So, of course, we're going to talk a bit to Brett King for some of the interesting news that came out about Movin today. We've got James Tuckett, CEO of InvestUp. I'll also be speaking to Mike Kane, who is one of the co-founders of Hedgeable. And then we're going to end up with an interview with Armand Gupta of Digital India. So before we get into all the good stuff, we are going to go through some announcements. So we've got a number of fintech conferences. Everyone loves a great fintech conference. I know I do. So I'm going to plug a few that are coming up very soon. So we have the Digital Finance Institute and the Fintech Association of Canada are hosting Fintech 2016, which is their second annual fintech conference in Vancouver. So the conference is April 14th. And you can register at www.fintech16.com. And then we have the always great Next Bank conferences, this time in the USA, which will be in Silicon Valley on May 12th. It has a really great lineup. So you can go to www.nextbankusa.com to register. And then we have the next in line of the FemTech meetups. So some of you who were at Cybos and InnoTribe last year, you saw a series of interviews and write-ups of interesting women in the fintech space that has become a movement. And we have a series of meetups around the world. So the next one is in London. That will be on February 10th, and it's being hosted by Lloyd's Innovation Lab. And of course, that is the week of Finovate. We have a lot of Finovate fans in the audience, I'm sure. So the Finovate Europe will be on February 9th and February 10th in London. Registration is going very, very quickly. I will be there, so please come by and say hello if I see you here in London at Finovate Europe. So you can register there at, again, www.europe2016.finovate.com. So also on the Finovate sort of side, the team is bringing you a brand new conference called FinDevr, focused solely on sort of the tech side of the fintech business. And it's going to have its first conference in New York City on March 29th. So if you go to New York 2016.findevr, that's FINDEVR.com, and use the code BBANKS, DEVR20, you will get a 20% discount. So we all love a good discount. So before we bring on Brett, who is chomping at the bit to talk about the big news of the day, I'm going to talk about a couple of bits of news that kind of caught my attention this week. And a lot of it has to do with payments. So I saw this in the New York Post earlier this week. Chase ATMs will be offering mobile-based withdrawals. I know sort of it's much more fun to talk about the death of cash, but I think the death of plastic is very much in our immediate future. So another thing that came up was a story from the UK. Apple Pay is, of course, one of the biggest launches of last year. Barclays, one of the big four UK banks, is basically the last UK holdout for Apple Pay, but they confirmed that they will probably be rolling out the service in the next 3 months. And something else also caught my eye, only because of one of the reasons. The Bank of England is planning to sort of develop a blueprint to look at the UK payment system, not only because of changes in customer behavior, but also because of the emergence of distributed ledger technology, or blockchain, to you and me. So blockchain is having an amazing influence on the financial services industry. So as I mentioned, I am hosting Breaking Banks today, but we all know that some of you can't go a week without Brett King, so we are bringing him on. Hello, Brett. How are you?
Hey, Liz. How you doing?
Hey. Very, very good. So you guys had a bit of an announcement today. So you've teamed up with Loan Refinancers, Common Bond, and Payoff. So you want to give us a bit of detail about that?
So one of the things that is really important for us in our mission in terms of the whole spend, save, and live smarter with Movin, with our customers, is helping them not just save money, but when they need to spend money, looking at minimizing the impact of that. So for credit facilities and things like that, particularly with student loans, where some of these student loans, the interest rate can be 8%, 10%, 19%. So by using services like Common Bond, you know, then they're able to consolidate their student loans around that. That, you know, this could save them tens of thousands of dollars over the long term. And you know, for being a Movin customer and using the Movin card in association with this, then they get a 25 basis point discount off the rate as well. So you know, we're really sort of trying to build out a role of services, particularly for the millennials who tend to be the bulk of our customers. And, you know, what we're really doing is now forming this partnership of fintechs. You know, we're working with Payoff, Common Bond. We've got something coming up with Max Levchin's firm, hopefully, in a couple of months. And, you know, other partnerships like this that really sort of bring together this suite of services that cover pretty much everything that a millennial or a, you know, gigging economy freelancer would need without to go through the traditional formal banking system.
Yeah, I mean, sort of that, I know in the U.S., the sort of politics around interest rates on student loans is a big talking point, especially for millennials or Generation Rent, as a lot of people talk about. You know, it's interesting you're going after that, you know, small minority of us that have a bit of debt in our lives. So is it more than just millennials that you're sort of targeting?
Look, we're open to everyone, and you know, we sort of have a mix. You know, probably about half of our customer base is millennials. We have some unbanked. We have you know, some early adopters of technology. You know, it's not fair to say that we're primarily millennials. I guess I'd say at least a third of our customers fall into that category. We're getting a lot more freelancers coming on now. So the sort of Uber drivers and people who rent out their Airbnb apartment, or freelance designers and things like that. So we're getting a lot more of that sort of activity now. And, you know, we're doing a sort of trial with the Freelancers Union in New York at the moment, sort of trying to work with them on some of that stuff as well. So I think the whole student loan thing, though, I mean, that's pretty unique to the U.S. You know, I know UK has a little bit of an emerging issue with that, in Australia as well, but no one has a student debt problem
the way the US does. Yeah, it's huge.
I just did this financing deal on my house not that long ago in the US, and my effective mortgage rate on the house is, you know, 3%, right? And you've got these student loans which are, as I said before, you know, some of them are 19%, you know, but the average, I think, is like 8 or 9%. And so you look at that and you say, with money so cheap right now, why is it that those that are starting out in life, we're sort of putting with these really expensive facilities up front, you'd think that to introduce the banking system to them, get them in, that you'd be aggressive. But it seems like, you know, the more money you've got, the cheaper you can get credit for. It's sort of stops the way that you think it should do. But
No, it's interesting. I mean, how did you guys team up with Common Bond? How did that happen?
So we actually have one of our team early on with Movin went over to Common Bond when they were starting, and so we sort of kept as Juliana, we kept some Juliana Young, we kept sort of in touch with her as alumni, and then we did a couple of events with Common Bond, speaking at events as you do in New York, you know, with these fintech events, and we got talking, and one thing led to another. But this is also part of our active strategy right now. So with you know, Anthemis as our you know, seed round support lead. They've got a number of venture companies. Payoff is one of them that you know, we sort of met when we were at the Anthemis retreat, which happens annually, and you know, that was how that happened. So, but the fintech guys, we all sort of stick together a little bit. We like, you know, we go dance, and we, you know, we tweet together, and you know, and so forth. So it tends to be one of these things where from a mindset perspective, you know, the it's really easy to come to these conclusions where we can find some value to each other, and it's quick to mobilize around that. It just really comes down to whether we've got the resourcing to make it happen. But it's much easier, I think, for fintechs to work together because of their common view of the world, rather than, you know, like the partnerships we do with banks tend to be a lot more, you know, unwieldy. You know, we got months and months of procurement hell to get through. Productive example. You just don't.
Very true. Very true. You're speaking my language. I understand where you're coming from. Cool. Well, I'm gonna. So thank you very much, Brett. I know you're sticking around to sort of close off the show when we go to one of your interviews. So hopefully you will stick around. So before we go to a break, I wanted to bring on two of the people that we're going to be interviewing later on. So we're going to be talking about two very different companies in sort of the alternative finance space. So I wanted to speak a bit to James Tuckett, who is CEO of InvestUp. And I'm going to do a small shameless plug and say that he is a 2014 Startup Bootcamp FinTech alumni. And he helped introduce one of our 2015 startups, Delio, at our demo day last year. So he's a friend. So James, I wanted to maybe if you could introduce yourself before the break to give you a bit of a background of yourself and your company.
Yeah, hi. Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on the show. It's very kind. So I suppose I'm the CEO of InvestUp, one of the co-founders. There's three of us. And we're sort of two serious years into our journey. We raised our first sort of seed round of capital on Crowdcube, so we've sort of been through the whole crowdfunding process. And essentially what we are is a portal for investors who want to access the, you know, the P2P and crowdfunding markets but don't want to go around signing up to hundreds of different accounts and getting to know the ins and outs of each of the different platforms. So we just bring it all together and describe ourselves as a sort of regulated brokerage. It's a very common model. You know, you just have to look to Hargreaves Lansdown to see it working in other areas.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So we've also got Mike Kane on the phone. He's the co-founder and master sensei, which I'll be asking you about later on, of digital investing firm Hedgeable. So hello, Mike. I was wondering if you'd give us a bit, bit of background and introduce yourself. Hello.
Sure thing. Thank you so much. So I'm Mike Kane. I'm the co-founder and master sensei at Hedgeable. So Hedgeable, what we try to do is bring a private wealth management platform to millennials. So you could think of us like a Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, private wealth management, but we target people who don't necessarily have $10 million. They might have $10,000 and They don't need to be 60 or 70 years old. They could be in their 20s, you know, 30s and 40s and get the same kind of service. My background is before Hedgeable in the private wealth space. I worked at Bridgewater, which is now a well-known hedge fund, but wasn't when I was there a long time ago. And also a private wealth shop where I managed about $2 billion for family office members. So really the goal of Hedgeable is, you know, why do we need $20 million and, you know, a big checkbook and be older to access that same kind of family office or Bridgewater kind of service?
Excellent, Mike. Thanks very much. I've just been told by the producers that I'm a little ahead of time, so I'm going to actually go back to James and ask him one of your questions, that I have for you, but before the break, and I took this a bit from a cheeky point of view from the homepage on your website, saying that, you know, you guys are 25 crowdfunding sites in one, and I'm one that thinks that there might be a bit too many crowdfunding sites. So, you know, why do we need 25 crowdfunding sites in one? What benefit does it give the marketplace, James?
Yeah, indeed. I suppose the main point of this is reducing risk in the long run. It's a consumer protection play for people. You know, loads of these sites are pretty new on the scenes. Many of them don't have runoff plans. These are plans in place for what would happen if the business went into insolvency, went into administration. So, you know, in order to sort of look after some of our clients better, we'd like to spread their lending across all the different sites that we work with. In the long run, we actually think we can get them a better return for the risk that they're taking, because actually the further you move out from the center of the P2P market especially, there are increasingly a growing number of very reasonably and well-run P2P sites where you can earn excellent returns. And these are typically overlooked. Some of them are really coming up the ranks. I mean, SavingStream is amazingly popular with some of the sophisticated lenders in the market. It's got a provision fund that they've put in place, but it's relatively unknown actually beyond the sort of sophisticated early adopters who've been around for some time. So we just want to bring more people like that into hopefully sort of spread it around a little bit, get these lesser known sites into the public domain. I think in the long run, it's going to benefit people.
Excellent. So I'm going to stop you there because I didn't want to get sort of into too much of some of our juicy conversation. So we are going to head off for a commercial break right at the moment. But before we do that, I needed to thank our sponsor, Temenos. Temenos is having an innovation jam in Miami, Florida on March 10th. And Brett King will be the main speaker and will be giving feedback to the innovators. So if you'd like to attend, please go to breakingbanks.com for information. And the link to the registration to find out more information on Temenos Innovation Jam. So I think we're very close to the break, so I'm going to send it off. We'll be right back after this very short break, and we will continue our conversation with James Tuckett of InvestUp, and then we will move on to Mike Kane of Hedgeable. So thanks.
What do you want your world to look like in 2030? This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we are joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's Moovin.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Move In is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Move In today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, welcome back. It's Liz Lumley and Brett King on Breaking
Banks. Hello.
So Liz is actually hosting today, but you know, before she gets back to the interviews, Liz, did you see that new news on Insurify?
No, I didn't. Why don't you tell me about it?
It's an MIT spin-out. They raised $2 million to replace human insurance agents with a robot. You can check it out on TechCrunch. But you know, this is, you know, we talked about this, you know, back and forth on social media probably a few months ago now, about where AI is going to impact jobs in the financial services space.
And yeah, we're going to see a lot more AI and machine learning coming up with fintech companies in the next few years, definitely.
But insurance has been a little late on this, right? You know, they've been a little bit behind. There's been P2P, there's been neobanks, all of that. We haven't heard a lot in insurance. We're about to start to hear a lot about this. There's a couple of insurance startups in Australia that are doing some very interesting things on claims. And, you know, this is, I think this is a one area where 2016 we might see a whole lot of action. But, look, I didn't want to take you away from the interview, but I just thought that was some news in terms of trend that we might see in 2016. Back over to you.
No, I agree both of it. I think AI and also insurance are both industries and tech to watch in 2016. So great. So as Brett said, I'm back. Liz Lumley, sitting in the host chair. So I'm right now in the middle of a conversation with James Tuckett, who is CEO of InvestUp, and they are kind of a marketplace for crowd funding sites. So James, you know, I had a bit of a conversation with Nectarius Leonius before the interview, because I know that you were part of Startup Bootcamp in 2014, and I said, you know, what type of thing should I talk to James about? And he said that InvestUp were really sort of big on pushing that you guys support both debt and equity crowdfunding. So, you know, why is that beneficial? Why was that so important that you make it clear that InvestUp covers both debt and equity?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I mean, going back to the beginning, so when I first sort of found out about P2P and crowdfunding, I saw it. So at the time, I was working as an accountant, and I was fed up with the use of language in financial services. It's all designed to kind of keep people from understanding what's going on, introduce complexity. There's so much jargon. And what got me excited about P2P and also at the time equity crowdfunding was it seemed much more to connect with ordinary people. At the time, it was getting a lot of press. It was exciting people. It seemed like it could be something that could be broadly appealing and relevant to more than just the few of us who've got money to invest. So I got very excited about the potential transformative capabilities of it. I am still an enormous supporter of early stage equity crowdfunding. I think it's very exciting. It's very different. It's a little bit you know, far away from where we're heading now. I mean, mm-hmm. our site, unfortunately, we've been very deep in development for the past 6 months. So it hasn't been up to date, kept very much up to date. But we are more focused on the P2P, the debt side of things. And we are interested in equity, but specifically equity that's asset-backed, so has a very different risk profile to some of the early stage stuff. I mean, in the long run, we're looking to kind of make a cash type product with a little bit of risk on the top. And yeah, so I mean, I think there's a good selection of things out there. And at the moment, we've kind of had this sort of little blip of excitement in the market over the past 3 years. People have gone, oh, hey, P2P crowdfunding, this is really exciting. Where could it go? And then it's died off a little bit because a lot of that early excitement came from sophisticated sort of early adopters, you know, people who look around, see what's new on, and that's kind of died off a little bit. And now institutional lenders have come into the market and a lot of the volume is coming from those people. But what's exciting at the moment and is a big, big thing for the market in the UK is the innovative finance ISA. So I don't know if everyone knows what these things are, but there's a cash ISA, which a lot of people in the UK have, many millions of us. Then there's the stocks and shares and ISA, which has also been around for a while. And now the Treasury and HMRC are introducing the innovative finance ISA. And this is specifically for P2P. It's a very, well, reasonably well-recognized brand. It's trusted. And I think that is the next step, if you like, for where this sector is going. So it had the initial growth and excitement, lots of press. Then the institutions have come in and a lot of volume has come from them. But now this is a chance for it to widen its reach once again on the back of the ISA. So, you know, we've been gearing up for that ourselves. We want to, one of the reasons that we're excited is if you have any, you know, we talk about 25 P2P and crowdfunding sites that we work with, wouldn't it be nice to have a ISA portfolio that covers the market and isn't just restricted to one site, which is currently the case as per the guidance that's out at the moment. So, yeah, I think broadly, you know, the market has some big changes to go through. You know, back to, I mean, our mission at InvestUp is basically to get people to invest on an everyday basis, get ordinary people thinking about their investments and actually feeling confident enough to go on and in the long run, self-select things. And that's what got me excited about P2P in the first place. Being a realist, yep. I know that that isn't going to be the case for everybody. Some people need an easy way to get into the market. That's why we've been building our robo-lending tool. We have a robot called Bertie.
I'm going to talk to you a bit about robots.
He's not a robo-advisor, so he's not smart like the Nutmeg advisor. I mean, I'm a huge fan of any of these kind of mechanisms or tools that basically take a lot of the pain away and take people out of the process and allow people who haven't got lots of money to more easily build a portfolio or more easily get into the investment space. Our answer to that is Bertie, but broadly, I'm really, really behind any of those kind of things. I suppose the big difference between our Bertie and other people's robots is that, you know, Nutmeg is a robot advisor. Ours is more just in sort of automated.
How did you come up with the name Bertie?
well, actually, we trawled a list of 25 of the most popular robot names from the movies. I'm a big fan of Wall-E. You know,
so I bet you didn't, you know, you weren't tempted by Hal or anything.
Yeah. And we've got another member of the team who's sort of doing stuff in the background at the moment called Robert. He's being very helpful, and that's how I thought Robert Burt, and yeah, it's got a nice ring to it. It doesn't mean anything though, just Burt.
I mean, it's interesting hearing about all this sort of evolution of the crowdfunding market and especially sort of its connection, as you mentioned, the new regulations to ISAs, which for those of you not familiar with the UK market is a savings scheme that's offered by banks. Yeah, it is very interesting. I mean, we all know crowdfunding was basically invented in London, so it's interesting to see how the model is evolving and changing from the London scene.
Well, I think this is the next step for it because the next bit of growth, because actually a lot of the big sites, the ones that many of us will know here in the UK, they're actually struggling more on the deal originations. They're struggling to find the borrowers. And one of the reasons why that could be is that not enough people know about peer-to-peer in the first place. You know, lots of people who could be lenders are also business owners or individuals who might borrow. So the ISA potentially for, you know, increasing awareness of this stuff could be very, very powerful.
Do you see InvestUp, you know, possibly partnering with banks in the future then?
I'm not sure. Well, I do actually have some ideas on that, but they're so fledgling that they wouldn't be appropriate for the radio. But what might give you an idea for where we're going is one of the big functions that we're going to offer in the market is online brokerages, execution only brokerages. You know, people like Interactive Hargreaves, some of the bigger asset managers. They have no real interest in tying up with individual sites on a sort of P2P site by P2P site basis. So because we kind of aggregate all of that in the first place and provide a portal, we've got all the, you know, we can handle client assets, we can execute our clients' trades. We're like the plumbing for the industry. Yes, we have a B2C customer face to the brand, but also we can be the wiring for some of these bigger institutions to access the market and make it available to their clients. So, yeah, we see a big part of our distribution over the next couple of years and broadly, you know, increasing the reach of this stuff being partnerships with some of those types of outfits. Not banks, but still fairly significant.
God forbid, banks.
I suspect with the banks it'll be a while. I think they've got to get more comfortable with P2P. I suspect a lot of it will be come down to how much business they do with the P2P sites themselves. Things like borrower referrals. I mean, we saw the Funding Circle Santander tie up, but I mean, if we see more things like that and deeper, then you know, potentially. Also, it depends on how the FCA ends up treating lending as well, yeah. And whether they get the same protections.
Cool. So I'm gonna go over to. So thank you very much, James. That was excellent. I'm gonna go over to Mike Kane of Hedgeable now. I think it was kind of interesting that we've talked a bit about robots and we've heard a bit about Birdie. Mike, you know, I was reading an article written by you saying that you predicted that 2016 will be the year the robo-advisor retires. You know, is this because, you know, I know that you have sort of a sophisticated investment platform for the masses. Is this because the masses will start to demand something more sophisticated than a robo-advisor?
No, it's a great question. So when we think of robo-advisor, you know, really what it was meant to do was to pigeonhole the digital wealth management industry into, you know, a very small part of the space, which would be, okay, sign up, answer 10 questions, and we'll spit out some kind of portfolio. If you look at platforms like ours and some others here in the U.S., much more robust and more sophisticated than that, and we're well beyond just doing a simple ETF portfolio. And we offer things like, not just ETFs, but stocks. We do alternatives. So we offer Bitcoin on our platform. We also have our own venture capital fund. We also do impact investing, so socially responsible investing. And these are all things that are second, third, fourth, fifth generation from just offering a very simple ETF portfolio. And so that's really what we mean by that, is that the platforms are becoming more robust. Many of the companies here in the U.S., such as Credit Karma and SoFi, have made a considerable leap into other things outside of their main domain. And one of those is, in fact, wealth management, savings. So we intend to have a much more robust platform ourselves. But we also see all the other personal finance apps making a play, you know, in becoming a much more diversified platform, in many parts looking more like banks do here in the U.S. or credit card companies.
Okay, where did you sort of find this passion to bring this private banking model to the masses? Then, what drove you to this?
Sure, I think really, if you look at our company, it's uniquely positioned in the space. We have a much different value proposition than the other firms. Many of their value propositions, if you think of a robo advisor, it's really to replace a traditional advisor. What's known as an RIA, or Registered Investment Advisor, here in the U.S. is to just replace them with something very simple, low cost online. Really, our goal is much different. It's to bring a more high net worth style platform down market. So when I say high net worth, if you think of traditionally how wealthy people around the world invest, they get very, very custom wealth management and portfolio management solutions. 2016 is a great example. They get risk management. So one of the big things that most of the very simple platforms miss is they're very bull market oriented. And what I mean by that is you'll see most of their assets, you know, Nutmeg or Betterment, whoever it is, they go up a lot during bull markets. Right now, what most would consider bordering on a bear market soon. Very difficult to get asset inflows unless you're giving some kind of downside protection. So that's what we offer as well. We have a downside protection piece of our platform that every single client gets. And we offer a lot of alternatives. So things that traditionally you would have to be a millionaire to access, you can open up a $1 account. So $1, you can open an account with us, and you get all the same features that you would traditionally 10 years ago, you would have needed at least $1 million to get all these things in the portfolio. So much different value proposition. It's more about bringing something down market than just making it cheap and accessible online.
Okay. Yeah. We're getting some tweets on Twitter about, you know, all this talk about robo-advisors is all well and good. But, you know, I think people are looking for more than just smart decision trees. It's a tweet from David Brer. Is that sort of the sort of passion behind your model, that even for the, as you mentioned, down market, they, you know, people still deserve a more sophisticated robo-type advice?
Yeah, so one of the main hits on the digital wealth space is, well, what happens when there's a down market? So we solve that. You know, there are solutions out there for this. If you look at fintech in general, and Brett can talk to this as well in his market, people are very myopic, and they see very, very short term. They look at what platforms are now. They don't look at what they will be 5 years from now or 10 years from now. So we're really in the first inning in the wealth management space. These are right now 1.0 versions, but become much, much more sophisticated in the future and become more platforms. And this is a lot of what we talk about. You mentioned before partnerships. We have a totally open architecture platform, meaning that we have an API. We allow partners to plug into our API. We're agnostic in terms of custodians and broker-dealers that we use. So theoretically, anyone in the world can use our platform. And so we're building more a platform, and it's not just a simple ETF tool or decision engine. It's more of an integrated personal finance platform where we want to, 5 years from now, we want to have savings and checking and credit and insurance products and, you know, wealth management products, everything that you would expect from a J.P. Morgan or a Goldman Sachs here in New York. We should be able to offer it at a much better price, much more accessible, and a much lower a minimum investment as well.
Okay. I mean, we've got about a minute left before the break, and I'm dying to ask this question because I'm kind of an anti-fan of strange titles, but you're the master sensei of digital investing. Where did that title come from?
Well, it's a good question. I'm actually right now looking. We have a graffiti mural. If anyone goes onto our Twitter, Instagram, we have our mascot is a hedgehog, and he's actually a ninja hedgehog. So we have a graffiti mural made by a really cool graffiti artist here in the States who did this for us. All of our titles here are actually Japanese themes. So we have senseis, we have ninjas, we have samurais. And I'm the master sensei. We also have Ronins, Shogun. We thought it's good. You know, employees really like it. Partners like it.
Lots
really
of fun.
Goes with our culture.
Cool. You know,
we're kind of an anti-Wall Street firm. You know, breaking banks is really what we try to do here. Disrupt.
Great.
Innovate.
That sounds perfect. So, Mike, thank you very much. We have to go to break. So I wanted to thank again our sponsors, Temenos. So please check them out, temenos.com, to find out more about their core banking systems. We'll be right back after the break.
Hey-o, Nicole, this is Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. We've got some exciting news for you. We've just joined with Radio Everyone and the United Nations on their Global Goals Initiative. Now, this is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. So, Breaking Banks, we're planning a special episode on October the 1st to talk about the organizations around the world that are using fintech to increase financial inclusion, to eradicate poverty, and reduce inequality. Join us at Breaking Banks and the team at Radio Everyone on the UN Global Goals Initiative to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Breaking Banks. This is Liz Lumley, and I'm actually going to be saying goodnight to all of you. But before I do, I'm going to hand it over to Brett King, who's going to introduce an interview that he did with Armand Gupta of Digital India. So, Brett, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. I'm not going to say too much more than just this is an interview we recorded earlier. But, you know, Digital India is part of India's initiative to really focus on digital and startups. And, in fact, they just announced a huge country investment fund, similar to what London has done, actually, in terms of investment in technology and startups. So let's hear about Digital India.
Hi, so we have in the studio visiting from India in New York is Arvind Gupta. He's the founder of Digital India Foundation. So, Arvind, first of all, what is Digital India Foundation?
So, Digital India was a program that the Prime Minister launched early part of this year, but has been built upon many years of visioning and thinking around how do you invert the pyramid, how do you make sure that you digitally empower a billion people in India so that they can play at a level playing field with anybody else in their quest for information, in their digital consumption, whether it's in financial inclusion, it's in education, it's in healthcare, agriculture information. The foundation really is a policy think tank around the visioning and the laying the right vision and the policy
is it,
frame.
Is it directly supported by the Indian government?
This foundation works as a policy. It gives an independent policy view to the right stakeholders, whether that's the government or the industry, and it also bridges the gap between the industry and the government.
So financial inclusion is an obviously stated goal of not only Digital India, but broadly the administration right now. And up to a few years ago, financial inclusion was a significant problem in India. You know, let's say if we go back to just after the financial crisis, 2010, what percentage of the Indian population did not have a basic banking service?
Out of the approximately 250 million households in India. Almost 50% of them were excluded from the financial system.
So you've had some recent success, you were telling me about, over the last 12 months with an initiative. Tell the listeners about the success you've had.
Well, this has been the biggest financial inclusion in the history of mankind. We have added almost 200 million bank accounts, spread over about 125 million households in the last 12 months. Done almost all through the mobile phones, paperless, built upon the Indian identity system of Aadhaar, and they're all electronic.
This is the National ID program.
The National ID program, right. Yes. And they're all electronic. So all electronic KYC, built on the Aadhaar system, very frugal bank accounts, frugal innovation in enlisting and enrolling the customers and the consumers, and really making banking a financial right, if you may, you know, removing the untouchability around banking. And today, anybody has a right, a basic right, equivalent to a basic right to open a bank account.
Right. But, a few years ago, we heard about India insisting that, one in five branches would be open in rural locations, things like this. But this is not that type of financial inclusion. This is grassroots mobile stuff, right? Why the mobile?
Well, I think India leapfrogged, and you asked a question about digital India. I think we leapfrogged two generations of technology. We just straight away went to a mobile-first country. The growth of mobile phones in India is almost 25 million per quarter, 100 million a year. That's where it's the easiest device. We've seen mobile literacy actually surpass alphabetic literacy. So people are actually using the mobile phone in ways and manners that you couldn't have taught them in school, and they're really not. A lot of these new mobile users are really not educated in the typical high schools or colleges. So that's the reason we went to the mobile first model. It's worked wonders. I mean, if you build a right, secure system of transacting, We've seen a great success. So we've also seen, we have kept it simple. The technology was very simple in this, and that has helped a lot.
Has to be. 200 million people. What sort of deposit base does that work out as?
Right now, we have a bank. What is the balance in these 200 million accounts? A little over average of 6 months of usage, has been about $5 billion.
Right. So this is not insignificant.
No, we believe it's going to go as high up, with a lot of benefits being transferred directly into these accounts by the governments, with the state government, with the central government. Slowly, we believe the employees will start getting their payroll into these accounts directly, with the direct deposits from the employers. We believe a lot of savings is already started, and it's going to kickstart a savings culture in the country. I think this is the start of the financial revolution for a billion people.
So this is incredible stuff. The fastest ever change in financial inclusion in history. But it needs to be said that you needed, this is the horse and the cart problem, but you needed a DAR really to do this, because you had to remove the requirement for physical KYC to make this happen, right?
Yes, the National Identity Project that we have taken up has all the basic elements of going paperless. So we were just adding a layer of paper when none was required.
So they don't need a signature to open a mobile account, those 200 million households?
A fingerprint is better than a signature.
Right, yeah. So how do they open an account, these 200 million people that were included?
It's basic contact information.
Through the handset?
To the handsets, and giving authenticating and the KYC norms through a mobile interface. Could be on a mobile device or on a PC or any device, basically. So, but that itself, was on an assisted model, that somebody from a bank or a banking correspondent did that. I think worth experimenting if you did it on a self KYC, a self open, you know, self verified documents in the future, but that remains to be seen.
Okay, all right. Now, you know, in terms of the actual payment ecosystem that you're building, how is the government or, you know, and banks commercially involved in partnering on this mobile based payment ecosystem?
So, along with the Aadhaar project, what the government is doing is building what is called the India Stack, helping. And this is, again, with the collaboration and cooperation of the industry, the banking, the central bank, and of course the policymakers. It's coming out with an open India Stack, open APIs, which will then enable any entrepreneur, and if I have to wear my entrepreneurial hat, a person like me or you or anybody, to build financial products, if you may, or financial applications using these open APIs. And everybody could have their own innovative business model and how they want to leverage transactions, how do they want to approach P2P lending, how do they want to credit score people. So the government is really enabling, and rightly so, I believe, by putting together a stack of open standards, open APIs, where any entrepreneur, any innovator can come and leverage it at an equal fitting than a bank. So you could really have the true dream of virtual banks and digital banks going forward.
So this is not an existing payment rails. This is a new ecosystem. Yeah?
This is a very, very new ecosystem with all open APIs. And along with that, the government has also actually done very innovative regulation by having 12 new payment banks and 9 new small banking licenses. Mm. 21 new banking licenses in the last 6 months. Are more banking more banks have been opened with this this one stroke of a new regulation than over the last 100 years in India.
Yeah, you got a while to catch up to the US, though, in terms of number of banks. I'm just joking.
Yeah,
I think the shrinking of the US.
I think the parallel is that you may have a bank in everybody's pocket, right?
Yeah, anyone can be a bank.
Right? That's true. Yeah. And,
so, two questions for you. One, are you bullish on the blockchain?
I think that's a great technology. Personally, I feel that needs to be understood and leveraged a lot more. How do you build more trust and confidence in the technology around it so that it cannot be manipulated and wrongly? And that goes with anything. But I think
that's the point of the distributed ledger, right?
It can,
you know, a centralized server is much, much more open to manipulation.
That's than
a
true.
Distributed system.
That is true, but you know, as I said, I think that is something that we'll all need to work together to see how we can leverage it better and going forward.
But this is in the cloud, the solution that you guys are building.
The
India Stack.
India Stack is all in the cloud. Yes.
Yeah. So a government-driven solution that's in the cloud.
It's more of a government-driven. API, right. with the back end in the cloud, yes.
Yeah. Okay, and you mentioned payment banks. So what's the difference between a typical bank that's been in India for the longest time versus these new payment banks?
Well, a typical bank can do, let's say, you know, can do a full service 20 different
mortgages,
transactions.
Credits.
Yeah, so a payment bank is really can hold and really facilitate payments.
So it's similar to what we saw emerge in the EU or in the UK with the e-money license type.
Something similar.
Yeah. It's interesting. This seems to be a bit of a trend, doesn't it, globally, that these secondary licensing of payment banks and so forth. What about the fintech scene in India? We're a fintech radio show. Tell me about the fintech scene and what you've observed.
See, India is sitting at what I believe, even though it's not so widely used in the US, it's a US company, the WhatsApp moment in fintech.
Yeah.
So I call it the WhatsApp moment in fintech, because we just talked about half a billion bank accounts in India. A billion identifiable individuals with biometric identity. A billion people with mobile phones. Almost half of them on the smartphones. So in the next couple of years, so you'll have half a billion people with smartphones, half a billion people with the bank accounts, and almost all these people will have an identity, a biometric identity system. Imagine the data exhaust that they would produce. Interoperability, and you know, is going to be the key. And I think the opportunities in P2P lending, in creating variable products for them, is immense. I think we are sitting at a moment, as I said, the WhatsApp moment in banking. This is a major thing that the world, I think, is following India because of the scale, the size, and the sheer innovation that it's bringing about.
So one last question. Let's think about the interoperability. One of the advantages that systems like Visa and MasterCard and Swift have is that you can go anywhere in the world, theoretically, and use them. When you talk about interoperability, is it a closed-loop system within India, or are you looking at interoperability on WhatsApp, for example, outside of India?
No, that's a very good question. I think we need to start solving the problem within India, and then we will, I'm sure the next step would be to how to make the system interoperable. We have more savings, we want these people to be traveling all across the world.
Conducting commerce.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think the step one is to make the interoperability work within a vast country like India.
Across any mobile in the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, Arvind, just quickly to finish up, tell, you know, how can we find out information about Digital India? And your initiatives?
Yeah, you if you Google Digital India or go to the website digitalindia.gov.in, you will get information out there. And there is the Prime Minister himself has led this whole movement of Digital India. He was in the Silicon Valley about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And
do you think you could get us an interview with him?
I think there are so many interviews out there that you can always use what he has said in the past.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks today, and good luck with your initiatives.
Thank you very much. Thanks for giving the biggest financial inclusion the airtime that it needs.
Absolutely. Arvind Gupta from Digital India.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.